Welcome to the Pacific Novel Project, the podcast where we edit stories and talk about books. Sitting across from me via the internet is Steve Childress.
Hello.
And I am Jason Keith. Today we are talking about Steve's book, Hollywood Dreams, and my unnamed project called Unnamed Project.
It's a great title.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And if you're listening to us, you found us on our website, pacificnovelproject.com, or Google Play, or our Patreon, patreon.com/pacificnovelproject. If you've only found us on one of those places, go and check out the other ones. Yeah, especially patreon.com/pacificnovelproject, because we got some cool stuff there.
And if you haven't found us at all, you're just not being adventurous enough.
Yeah, then we're just talking to ourselves.
Yeah, you know.
But we enjoy each other's company, so it's cool.
Yeah, indeed.
We also got a Facebook page, pacificnovelproject.com, or just Pacific Novel Project.
I think technically we have like two Facebook pages.
Yeah, that's true. We have a private group and a regular page and Twitter.
Oh, yeah, the Twitter.
Yeah, Pack Novel Project.
Yeah.
There wasn't enough room for Pacific, so we had to go with Pack.
Yeah, you know, hey, you got to sometimes, I guess, you know, bring in that brevity.
Our book of the month for our Bring Your Own Book Club, if you want to join that, check that out at Patreon, is The Buried Giant by Kazuo Ishiguro. Ishigawa. God, I did it again. I wanted to talk about the guy and then not look at his name so he could pronounce it, because I actually know how to pronounce Japanese names. Whatever, The Buried Giant, Google it, you'll find it.
Is it Ishiguro?
Ishiguro, close enough.
Something like that.
And we're doing The Road. February book is The Road.
Yes.
By another guy's name I always mess up.
Cormac McCarthy.
Thank you.
And he's a centaur, by the way.
He's a centaur?
According to Mike Tyson's Mysteries, Cormac McCarthy is a centaur. Or, as Mike Tyson calls him, a horseman.
Yes. Centaurs are the horsemen. Unless they're ladies, and I guess they're horse ladies.
Yep, you are correct, sir.
So we're working on my project first. And then we're going to switch over to Steve's. And so I'm going to turn it over to you, Steve. Let's get rolling.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to roll into this in order of commenting, which is, you know, not the usual rulage, but, you know, we've already covered this on previous shows. One second here.
It's okay. I'm unbuttoning my shirt. I feel like a lint in my belly button.
Ooh, sexy. Okay, so where we left off was Hardwin Arnesen and this mysterious girl go back to the crash site for this meteor, and they find some men from the Order who have roughed up, what's his name?
Con Derwin?
Yeah, Con Derwin's kids. And Hardwin Arnesen has to kind of lay down the law a little bit. And luckily there's a soldier there from the Order that he's able to connect with. And he takes the boys and the dog and the other dog that they killed, right?
Yeah, they killed both the dogs.
Well, they killed both the dogs. Okay. I knew one of them was dead for sure. So both dead dogs back to Derwin's ranch. And then section two, We're getting Hardwin Arnesen and the strange girl returning to Hardwin's home.
Page, what is that, 26? Yeah, 26.
Page 26, yes. I thought the summation of Derwin's ranch after Hardwin had returned with the boys kind of felt a little exposition-y.
Too much?
Yeah, it felt too much on the exposition side. But, I mean, I liked the recount of it. Yeah, it just felt exposition-y. Let's see, when they do enter the house, it seems like he's the only one that goes inside, but then the girl's in the sitting room, and I don't remember her coming in with him or around him. So it was just kind of, I was like, oh, where'd she come from? I mean, I could assume she went in, but yeah, I was just kind of like, whoa, okay, where'd she come from? Page 27, she's hungry. And he's like, I'm too tired and irritated to cook. So she goes and kind of rummages around his pantry. And I kind of found myself surprised that he's trusting her to cut up vegetables and cook them by herself. I don't know if it's a good idea considering his contemplations in the sitting room. I should have highlighted that.
What about his contemplations? I mean, how's that related
to the girl possibly coming from the craters, which means he doesn't know what exactly she is. I mean, she could be like, kill all humans, and he wouldn't know. I'm just gonna burn down this guy's house and make it look like an accident.
I was thinking girls by her age are already kitchen help anyway, so wasn't too out of the nerve.
And I just highlighted one of those crazy capitalized the cities that kind of pop up randomly.
Oh yeah.
Indentions are needed. I'm sure they're on the word draft, but they don't translate when you copy them over.
No, sometimes they do. Sometimes,
yeah, and that's fine. That's why I didn't go through and edit them on this draft. So still page 27. Highlighted a couple words that were used really close together. Thought maybe just one of them could maybe be substituted for something else that means the same thing, just for the repetition's sake. Had some little minor edits that you can see, and for those of you that are going to follow along at home, you can see them as well. And I do ask that you follow along at home if you are inclined enough to do so, or if you have subscribed and you think we're savvy.
Savvy, so savvy. I like the word savvy. I like sassy too. Sassy's kind
of fun. Ooh, sassy's a good one too. Yeah. That'll be sassy and savvy. That's double trouble. And then she comes in with her dinner bowl with some soup she made in it, and he's like, oh, all of a sudden interested now. And he finds it actually pretty delicious. And I liked that the girl is able to eat the supper. The soup being like scalding hot adds dimension to her character, especially like when it was like super hot for him and she's just like, la di da di da, you know, this is lukewarm to me. At least that's the impression I got.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of interesting. Something to add to the mystery of her character. And then a little bit further down the page, I think there was a stray word. Was think supposed to be thick? Thick hand towel?
Oh, probably.
Okay.
I got another rod there too.
Yep, saw the rod. Hey, at least I'm not doing what Justin does and, you know, puts a big cock and balls over it.
Is he drawing cock and balls on my manuscript?
Yes. Only where there's like rods okay. And mentions of people's staffs.
Okay. I didn't realize I had a lot of staff mentioning in this thing.
You know, I don't know if there's a lot, but there's definitely a cock and ball over one of the rods that I've seen on the manuscript.
Okay. Yeah. He's a hoot.
He is. Didn't really have much else on this page. 29. The moon was in its last quarter and tinged an orange-red from the remaining dust in the air, but the field was well lit by its soft glow. The lands in the southern area, of a place to be named later, were marked by long, gentle, rolling waves. And I like the aesthetics being conveyed here of the landscape. It actually kind of made me think of like Nebraska.
It's exactly the state I was thinking about.
Woohoo! Same page. Let's see. But there were many shallow holes where whole armies could be hidden in, much like the one where the object had struck. Now, this makes me think of like a World War I deathscape. And I'm kind of wondering if the shallow holes are a natural occurrence or from...
Well, that's hollows.
Oh, hollows. Shallow hollows.
Yeah, so if you're on the plains, and they look flat, but they're not actually flat. They're just kind of like, they're hollows. I think they're called hollows. Just the dip and the low, gentle roll. They're like gentle rolling waves. And you can actually, there could be, you know, stuff behind the next. It looks flat, but there's actually, you know, all these hollows that you can't see what's in them.
Okay, yeah, depressed or low part of the surface. Fair enough. A small valley or basin. Okay, I see what you're going for now. All right, still on 29, moving down the page. Hardwin Ardenson, I keep wanting to call him Anderson, let out his breath, which he was unaware he was holding. And this is in regard to these silhouetted riders that are going across the plain. And they're clearly official in the capacity of probably military. And I liked the moment of tension following the encounter he had with the soldiers from the order where the meteor had struck. And I think it's a good the acknowledgement happened with the reciprocated wave. Because, I mean, I don't think they would have waved back if there was ill intention. But maybe they would have. Just, you know, false sense of security.
They waved first.
Oh, yeah, they did, I guess. Okay.
Yeah, I don't remember how far this goes. Those are the guys who go tear up Caradan Derwin's place and arrest him.
Spoiler alert.
Oh, does this part not go that far?
No, it doesn't.
Oh, okay.
Hey, it's all right, man. I'll just be looking forward to it. And then I liked that he nearly trips over the girl who's standing like directly right behind him. Because kids do have like a knack for doing that at like the worst possible times. But sort of dogs. So, and cats. So, yeah. So, I mean, I guess kids like pets then? Or are pets like kids?
More like pets are like kids because you still can't take them on vacation. And
yeah, you can't put kids in a kennel.
I mean, some assholes bring their pets on vacation.
True, true.
If you're like an RV with your pet, that's cool. What bugs me is the people who bring them on the plane.
Oh yeah,
I don't think that should be allowed.
True. I mean, if you have like a chill pet, like in a hotel, all good. But I mean, if you just have a dog that's just gonna bark at anything going down the hallway, nobody likes that. Nobody does.
It's just so many people are allergic to animals. I mean, bring one on a plane. I don't even see how that's allowed.
Planes just, yeah, on that note, especially with allergies, yeah, it's kind of a not good thing. All right, page 30.
You never see like a Doberman on a plane. I mean, they put those in the crates. I mean, maybe because they would make their owner buy another seat. I don't know. But just because you can fit your dog inside your purse, I don't think you should. I think you should just have a small cage. I don't think you should be able to bring it on.
Yeah, you could probably put a mini Doberman in a purse.
Obviously, that annoys the crap out of me because I'm still talking about it. There you go. There's our dogs on the airplane sidebar.
I'm sick of these motherfucking dogs on this motherfucking plane. Sorry, I had to go there. I had to.
That's all right.
Okay. The girl nodded solemnly as if she knew exactly what Hardwin Ardenson was speaking about. Then she went to the pot and began to ladle more soup into her bowl. And this is like, you know, after he kind of blows up at her for like almost tripping him when he turned around. And he's like mildly irritated and he was like, sorry. So I like the nod of confirmation. And I'm torn whether or not some acknowledgement in her thought or others should possibly come across Ardenson's mind. He seems an astute individual who might notice such a thing, but it works that he dismisses it as well. Maybe it will make some reveal of the girl more impactful later. Let's see here. Is there some text missing here? Because I'm trying to remember what I... There was something that I thought he observed about her, but didn't go too much into detail on it. And that's the reason why I commented the way I did.
Your last thing about wanting to see some more inner dialogue from Arnson?
Yeah. That's weird. Because I'm sure I read something to... make me go, oh, but I don't see it now. Anyway, okay, moving on. Still on page 30. I think the pipes in his dreams, and then he wakes to the sound of pipes. I think that was interesting. I wonder if she's an influence on his nightmares or his nightmare that he had.
You mean giving them or soothing them?
Both. Little column A, little column B.
No, but that was her. Like, knowing he was having problems sleeping and helping him out.
So the pipes were soothing him. Okay. All right, page 31. Okay, so he creates her a place to sleep on a rug in front of the fire with a blanket, and the dog goes and sleeps with her, lays down next to her, and she puts an arm over the dog and share body heat, you know, all that good stuff. I like the dialogue with the dog that Ardenson has with the dog. Don't get used to that, you spoiled pisser. Arduin Hardinson told him, she won't be around long and you're not sleeping on my bed. But I also like the dog's body language, where Hardinson would swear to himself he saw the dog narrow his eyes at him as if to say, we'll see about that. So it kind of gives the dog some character, other than just being just like, oh, hey, there's the dog. It's like, oh, hey, there's the dog that has some sass. Okay, he picked up the pot and used to keep water and open the back door, and the dog jumped up to run outside. That should probably be they.
Probably should be he. Oh, wait, that was the dog with him. Yeah, I guess it could be they.
That's where I was like, hey, did he and the dog both go do some relieving? Because I was like, well, did the dog go out with him? Where's the dog?
Okay.
And I thought it was interesting that he goes out and dumps a bucket of cold water on his head, and it's like a morning ritual. So he like does it like every morning to just wake himself up and like make himself sharper just from that jolt. It's like his own like created rude awakening.
Yeah.
I think it's great. Works. I do that when I'm camping. Just grab like a bottle of water that's been left out all night in the cold and just dump it all over my head and be like, whoa. Okay, so he's stoking the fire in the stove and he's looking at the soup for like breakfast. Down at the bottom of 31, that should be soup.
Oh yeah, probably.
Okay. 32. The streets had felt narrower and more enclosed. People weren't out as late, and this that were stuck to pubs and taverns. That needs a little attention.
Okay.
Just reads really awkward.
So that needs a lot of attention.
Yeah, and this is like when he's like kind of like reminiscing on like the last time he was at the Capitol and just how weird it was, how it seemed to change the whole atmosphere of the place, less joyful and more solemn and kind of downtrodden. But, you know, they never suspect the Spanish Inquisition.
Yeah.
And then highlighted a couple instances of the capitalized the city. And I'm pretty sure this is supposed to be shirt. Her worn shirt was stained. Ended up being shift.
Yeah, it's supposed to be shift.
It is?
Although it might actually... Oh, no, he hasn't started dressing her yet. Yeah, shift.
Okay.
Shift.
Okay.
Like an undergarment. Ladies' undergarment. But that's probably not a good word choice. Actually, I'm wondering if he should find her naked. I wonder if she should be naked when he finds her.
Yeah, I mean, if you're coming from a meteor, I mean, you might be.
Superman was naked.
Superman was naked.
So was Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah. Nothing but the birthday suit. All right, page 33. Okay, this is the shack that's the bathhouse. It wasn't large, big enough for a cast iron tub. He had to scrunch himself into and a pile of cordwood and for convenience. I thought this sentence read a little odd.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's really all I had on that page. 34. The girl looked at him from the corners of her eyes, then sighed as if she were the one enduring a troublesome child. I like the switch around on that. And she's like what you could call an old soul, but she is definitely more than just that, it would seem. I mean, because, I don't know, just her mannerisms, and she's very childlike. But I've noticed, like, she at times, like, it's just like, I don't got any patience for you, son. Yeah, she just seems like in ways older than Ardenson or more experienced or more zen, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just something about her that just feels in kind of that realm, which is interesting. I mean, it just adds to the mystery of the mysterious girl. Page 35. Disregard the highlight of shift. I'm just kind of had a few little minor edits on this page. 36. Okay, Randall John's place. I thought this was an interesting development and just kind of how expansive this guy's place was. But what I thought was really weird was Hardwin talks about like John's and Derwin's workers that they hire, and they pretty much like hire out of the same pool of workers, but like the workers at John's place, he didn't seem to recognize any of them. And so I thought that was kind of odd. I mean, odd, like as in like the story odd, but like not odd as in like, I don't like it. If that makes any sense. Kind of all over the place right now.
Okay.
Bottom of 36. I think that's supposed to be they. They had watched him solemnly as he slid into the scabbard that hung from his saddle. Would they be the horse and the girl?
Dog and the girl?
The dog's not there. The dog stayed home.
Well, we're clicking now. He hasn't even left his house.
Are you sure?
Okay.
Yeah, I was just wondering who they were. Because I don't think they've met the Herald yet.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who they are.
Okay. Fair enough. I thought this could use a little work here. Because it looks like he slides into a scabbard. I mean, that'd be cool if he fit. But yeah, this is kind of the way I read that. I was like, huh.
It's a magic scabbard.
Would that be like a scabbard of holding?
Yeah. Or swallowing.
Yeah. All right. Little further down, 37. He reminded himself to trust his instincts. He may not be as sharp as he was with a blade, but his mind was as sharp as ever. Something was not right here. I like the setting of expectations and also a little into like Hardwin's strengths versus weaknesses.
Okay.
But I kind of want a little more on what he doesn't feel is right. With the place. I got that the hands were not recognized as usual hands that cross over to work for the other dude. I was just wondering if there was something else that's putting him on the edge of that not right here feeling. And then let's see here. I liked the description of the house and the surroundings. Also going into the house with the colored wood and the different colors for the different rooms. I thought that was all good. I felt pretty oriented throughout this this time at this guy's plantation ranch, what have you.
Okay.
I made a comment. I was like, is there a carriage house or is the stable or barn used for that purpose? Richie Riches would probably have a carriage house.
Yeah.
But then I noticed it comes up later. There's like a kind of a carport thing for the carriage house kind of usage. An old man came outside, and this is bottom of 37, dressed in a fine tunic and hose of a court herald, like tights?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think they're called hose.
Could be.
I think they called them that back then.
I mean, they might have. I don't know.
It's a fake place, but...
Yeah, I just wasn't sure. I was like, I'm gonna question mark this, and I'll ask Jason about it, because I wasn't sure. I was like, maybe this is right. I don't know.
Maybe I'll have to ask Google.
Yeah, hey, we can always do that. And again, the setting of expectations. Randall John's arrogance had not been tempered in retirement, and so we kind of get an idea of like possibly what kind of person this guy is that we're gonna meet. Page 38, we really had nothing on this page. 39, about halfway down. And this kind of has to do with the different tones of the wood. The entry was twice as large as Hardwin Ardenson's home. The wood throughout the common areas had been dyed white. He had been to a meeting in the study once and knew it had been stained to, I guess that would be... a deepened tone of wood. I was just kind of wondering, like mahogany, cherry, dark wood, something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
Just thought I'd throw a couple suggestions out, you know, take them or leave them. Okay. In some other rooms, the wood had been dyed green or yellow, but the lower level where guests were entertained were white and bright. So yeah, I liked that. That was good. And it kind of gives like different sectioning off of the house, like, like, who are you? You're not supposed to be in the green area. You know, kind of, you know, like that kind of stuff. Bottom of 39. After he blesses a child worker with his sword, you know, shoulder to shoulder, kind of almost like knighting somebody is what I got from it. The power, then he gives this kid a blessing, and this guy's like, oh, the gods are dead, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that was stupid. The power, and then Ardenson replies with, the power of the blessing comes from within the blessed, not the gods. Hardwin Ardenson said, and I like that sentiment. This is where I was kind of like, is the order like a force of Inquisition?
No, they're not an Inquisition.
Okay.
In the time of the gods, like Hardwin would be like a paladin type character, but the gods are gone and there's no divine magic anymore. So they're just like knights. They're like who are just carrying on the tradition of the old way.
Okay, so they're like a bunch of Sir Gawains riding around.
Yeah.
Kind of. But yeah, okay, I gotcha.
And I don't know if I've gone into it yet, but I go into a bit later how all these orders were, after the gods left, some were disbanded, some were destroyed by angry citizens, some are just like military mercenary units now, and that like his is one of the few that survived the chaos of that time and the transition from a secular world to a non-secular world.
Yes. Yeah, actually that was, I enjoyed that. That's in here. And I enjoyed that world building, that history of these lands that we're currently with Hardwin in, that we're going to be adventuring through as the story moves along. I was digging kind of the building of the history there and the ideas of like what this order was and kind of how it had like different chapters, if you will. Page 40, a little bit down. I just made a suggestion from and 80 feet out to like some 80 feet out, expressions of how I've seen, you know, okay. I've heard, you know, uses of measurement spoken in that frame before. So just that I'd throw it out there.
At least I gave you an actual measurement this time.
I know, right? Hey, that works. Not always needed, but always appreciated. And then a little bit further down, there's the carriage house, the covered carport.
Yeah, not quite carriage house fancy.
Would it be a carport, though?
It's more like a wagon port.
I think it'd be more of a wagon port. I mean, would they have called them cars back then?
Probably not. I don't know.
Stuff that went through my head when I was reading it, man. I got to ask questions. I have to. A little further down. Oh, and there was a buggy. They had the Griffin buggy, which was Randall John's. Then there was another buggy that had no symbol. Now, was there two or three buggies there?
I think there's just two.
Okay. Because the other buggy said it had a symbol of a sun with rays radiating out from it. But earlier it said it had no symbol.
Oh, I guess there's three buggies. Three buggies.
I thought the one that didn't have the symbol on it was the one that's referred to here as like Randall John enjoyed showing his status and he associated with no one who could not afford such a show. And that's why I thought maybe there was three buggies is because he had the Griffin buggy. Then he had like the plain one, and then there was the.
I think I forgot it was a plain buggy, and then did that.
Well, you can always make it three.
That symbol on it.
Yeah, I mean, you could always make it three buggies, because I already had the. I mean, this already gave me the impression that the second buggy was just like Randall's. Like, this is my going to church buggy, and this is my. I'm just gonna ride down the lane buggy. You know, I don't know. Okay. And then Harold totally gives this guy like just the base answer, man. Whose buggy is that? Hardwin Ardenson asked. Another guest, the Herald answered. It's just another guest. You know, it's just, oh man, I can just totally see that. I just totally hear the pomp in that dude, in that dude's voice.
But he did explain that he didn't see the guest's arrival, so it wasn't like he was being a dick.
Yeah, I know, but damn, I was just, I don't like him.
I think I should have just dropped it right there, another guest.
No, I kind of like that. I kind of like that the Herald kind of shines him on a little bit. The Master met his guest personally, and I did not have the pleasure of his name. I believe he is from the Sutherlands. Now go away. That's, the now go away isn't in the text, but I added that. And I thought this was interesting, was that when he pointed out the buggy, and I'm assuming it's the buggy with the sun, that the girl grabs his hand and leans in close against him. And I thought that was kind of telling, just that body language. Like,
you're very astute.
Yeah, hey, you know, I do what I can. And I liked that, you know, he makes this comment again of just how quiet she is and how she just kind of like blends into the background, if you will. And he like starts to wonder if she was like trained by like a street urchin gang or something like that. And I loved this, man. This was a great comment. Hardwin Ardenson wondered if he would need to count Randall John's silverware before he left. Then he decided he didn't care. Hardwin, you're a dude after my own heart. I wouldn't care either. Page 41. We come to an archery field where we have Randall John and a few other guys, and they're doing like archery contest stuff. Now, one question I had here, there were three men. Two were leaning, standing with their bow slung over their shoulder and watching a third. And I was just wondering, leaning or standing? And if leaning, then leaning on what?
Okay.
Yeah, that's all I had on that. And there's the city again, a little further down.
Yeah.
Down towards the bottom. He was long and slender and could have been curved into a bow himself. That was great. I liked that. Kind of gives me a really good idea of just like how skinny this dude is. And I thought, yeah, I thought that was cool. Good description work.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You always have really good description work, though. At least I think so.
Thanks.
Oh, you're welcome. Let's see here. The Southerner only took a moment to aim before he let the arrow fly. It flew over all the round targets. It was just, yeah, just the way it read it, it tripped me up, and it still tripped me up now. So, yeah, just maybe review it.
Okay.
All right, 42. I only had a highlight on this page because it was just a parentheses, Hardwin Ardenson. So I just highlighted it. And I loved this down at the bottom of 42. I was like, when I was reading it, I was like, I believe you may know number one. I was like, when did I get into Star Trek? It made me want to go make Star Trek memes.
Nice.
when they're all in Sherwood Forest in the holodeck.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I was like, that totally conjured it up for me. I was like,
boy.
Nice. Anyway. Page 43. I just had some minor edits on 43. Nothing really there as far as like anything to like super comment on or whatnot.
Okay.
44. I have to agree with Hardwin Ardenson that he should not have been honest with Randall John, especially in the company of the people that were there. Like the one dude that's like off over with like some other guy starts to take an interest in the girl. The dark man's head snapped toward them and he focused his gaze intently on the girl. Hardwin Ardenson immediately wished he had not told the truth, wished he had not come at all. Hardwin Ardenson squeezed the girl's hand tightly and pulled her against him. Now, I like that turnaround. Like, she had squeezed his hand and nuzzled into him, and now he's squeezing her hand and like keeping her and like pulling her against him. And I like how that kind of turns around. And definitely the dark man gazing intently, just kind of like gives me a feeling that he's a nefarious dude. And he knows something that we don't know yet, that not even Hard One knows yet. And then, of course, John was going to be like, you're welcome to leave her here, and I'm happy to have her conducted around this estate to see if anyone recognizes her. You found her by the meteor. You don't say, well, you can leave her here if you want to. that's kind of how I took his offer, was just like, oh, dude, this guy's a worm. And then Hardwin, he's like, no, I'll take her. We're gonna go like visit the other neighbors and we'll see how it goes. Page 45, Hardwin Arnson visited so-and-so and so-and-so. I just had a question. Will any of these so-and-so peeps be relevant later?
No.
No? Okay, so it really is just so-and-so and so-and-so. And he takes the girl home, a little bit irritated that he went to John's and opened his big mouth. A little further down, well, really at the bottom, he thought of what he knew about falling objects. Many times they were just rock, and their appearance seemed random, and any ill event that accompanied them seemed coincidental to Hardwin Arnson. But people only remember the ill portents, not the absent ones. His father had told him they were rocks thrown from the mountains by angry giants, and his father would make scary grunting sounds, and Hardwin Arnson would laugh. I like that little bit of background info we get there, that little glimpse into little Hardwin's life, and a little bit of magic to the realm, even if it's just a tall tale being told by his father. I thought that was kind of cool. 46. Yeah, here's where we get into the history of the land. This land is to be named later, fared better than most. There was famine when the sun was blocked out, and the people ripped down the temples in fear, demanding the priests pray to the gods for answers. And I like the history of the land going on. Got to answer those questions at some point. And actually, I feel this is a good time for this. Probably the tales Hardwin was told, and then also his own experiences. And we kind of get all of it like right here when he's like kind of like telling it to the girl. And a little further down. Now, is it singular or plural god?
It was gods.
And I thought it was interesting that they banished a bunch of priests to go on a pilgrimage out to where the great mountain fell and beg the gods for forgiveness, and seeking penance for the hubris. The order did this with agreement from the head priest to be named later. They would sacrifice themselves for the good of the land, for law and order in a godless world was more important than anything at the time. And I like the history of it. I mean, it just kind of, it seems like a flow of events that I was like, yeah, okay, I could see that.
Okay. Maybe it will survive the next cut then.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it was good. It answers some questions. It really does. And I think it's a good time for it, especially I love when he's telling the girl and she just kind of laughs at him. And he's like, yeah, like my great great grandfather's sword. I buried the other swords with their owners, but I still have this sword because my great great grandfather, blah blah blah. And then she's just kind of like, I was like, oh damn, dude. She is sassy. And then they get home, everything looks normal. Hardwin goes around checking the house and kind of makes the dog feel a little bit slighted, which I thought was cool. Kind of added a little bit more to the dog having a personality, which was cool. But if the dog dies and the dog has a personality, you're going to make someone cry. Mark my words.
Yep.
I've read Where the Red Fern Grows. I know how that shit rolls. Wouldn't the soup be a little, like, not good to eat by now? I'm just asking.
It's only been a couple days.
On the counter.
It's olden times, man.
Okay. Fair enough. Enough said. I'll roll with it.
I mean, that's why they have it every. That's why they've had it every meal for the last 2 days.
Hey, yeah, you got a point there. I like this little thing about like, oh, I wish I had some bread. Bread would be delicious with this soup. I should have got bread. And page 49, just had a couple little edits, but I thought that the way this section ended with her curling up on his lap and her head on his chest, and he's just like, you know, just out of reflex, just like kind of stroking her hair. And like in that moment, he realizes he'd do anything to protect her. So like she's totally grown on him, and he's like actually she's become dear to him at this point. I think the progression to that point, I think it's working.
All right, good.
And that's all I got. You got any questions?
No, not at this point.
Okay.
Shitty first draft.
All righty then.
All right, so let's move along to Lou's Tavern in the great city of Los Angeles in Hollywood Dreams. I swear to God, last episode we picked up at Lou's Tavern as well.
We might have. Tim goes there a lot.
So we've recovered the girl, saved from the Nazis at the Pally House, and we rolled into Tombs Buddy's Tavern. Lou, the old speakeasy butt guy from Prohibition days. So he walks in, page 166. There is a heavy concern that lays on me as I scan the scene in the tavern. Lou, I'm home, I call out. None of the customers seem to be staring more than just a glance up at the newcomers. I think it's natural maybe to glance when somebody comes in and yells. So it seemed to me it'd be more out of place if they stared. I just think the use of staring in the sentence is just kind of throwing me off.
Okay. Yeah, I see where you're going with that. And I think I have an idea already for how to maybe fix that.
I just thought, there's several places in these pages that kind of cracked me up. Being respectable takes me all sorts of places, Tomb says when Lou asks him where he's been.
Yeah.
And I like how Lou just knows who Elsa is. I brought the girl in for a tour, hey? That sounds like some kind of code for let me show you where the gambling hall and the booze is.
Hell yeah! Nice.
Toward the bottom. Oh, I just thought that was weird that the cook came out and was serving the food. The description of the cook did not make it sound like somebody I'd want serving me food.
Hey, it's 1941, man.
I know, but still. That seemed like something Lou would be doing, or a waitress.
Well, he was until he got, you know, had to give a tour.
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, I see what you're saying with the appearance of the cook.
And then I followed up. Wait, when did Lou get a chef? Is this part of his renovation?
Yes. I've kind of hinted like earlier on that there might be a second person in the bar, but I haven't like ever introduced him or anything.
Okay.
And this is finally where I'm like, okay. Let's call him Jerry and have him do something.
He never actually gets introduced to Elsa.
Oh, yeah, huh?
So I just highlighted a random part of this sentence and pointed out that there probably should be some introductions. 167, they go into the dusty old speakeasy and everything's dusty except for the bar. And so I was just like, hey, why is that? Is Lou go back there and just clean the bar? In a few paragraphs, we find out that's exactly what happens, but
yeah.
But I don't know if that's the right place. I don't know. Next paragraph. The derelict scene conjures up memories of the past that weren't a World Series celebration, or a group of friends engaging in a bit of civil disobedience, or Danny and I being the kind of friends you attach best, or the happy marriage of a couple of young Bonnie and Clyde wannabes. Wasn't quite sure what you're going for there. Was it the opposite? Like, is he feeling melancholy?
Yeah, like the memories he was having at the moment, they weren't happy. They weren't the best and brightest.
The emotion was the opposite of those things.
Yeah, I could definitely probably find a way to make that more clear.
You know, reading this a second time, I'd almost like to see a flashback there.
Okay.
You know, almost like a TV flashback where the people in question are... they're there in the bar, like, take us there. What kind of conversation were happening in that bar in what, the late 20s?
Yeah, late 20s and like early 30s.
Because right now they kind of telling, not showing.
Hey, that's fair. That's fair. You're not wrong.
Oh, then it says, then this is where we get to Lou takes his usual position behind the bar. Because you said usual, it made me think they were back in the other bar.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Yeah, I could see how that would.
And then I was like, oh, no, he's behind the bar down here, and that's why it's so damn clean. Maybe even Lou getting behind that bar is what, you know, can trigger memory, too.
True. True.
Page 168. Oh, I forgot Anna was there.
Yeah, Anna's not supposed to be there. If Anna's there, it was a typo.
Oh, okay.
Because there was one part that I was like, for some reason, I accidentally wrote her in because I was like thinking about something else. Then I read it back and I was like, what the fuck is Anna there for? I thought I got them. I thought I got all the Anna stuff, but maybe I might have missed something.
Yeah, okay. So Lou's pouring people drinks because when you run from Nazis, you need some booze.
Too true.
Page 168. I didn't say much. They're just talking about what happened. Elsa eschews the bourbon. That's weird. I thought I made a comment on this page. And asks for some gin, and she coughs. She's like, what is this stuff? My first thought was like crap left over from the Prohibition, probably.
Probably.
And then Monty says, stick with the bourbon. Monty says, as he picks up a glass of bourbon, and I thought, oh, maybe it'd just be kind of funny if he takes her glass since she's not. Wasn't drinking.
I see. Okay. I see what you did there.
Because Lou poured her a glass of bourbon, right? And then she was like, oh, no, none of that stuff. And then you can take a sip and hand it back to Elsa.
Yeah. Works for me.
Or maybe not give it back to her. Just
freaking she lost it. Your chance.
Yep. All right. So then they're talking about how they were hiding. So she starts letting them know about her sister Nancy was killed and how Richter's involved at the gallery, flown into 169. Elsa takes another drink and another puff. She's smoking. Says her sister was studying art at the college. I don't know, there's like a million colleges in LA. I don't know if it matters or not, but that seemed random. I don't think a person would say the college. I think they would say USC or whatever. I don't know how old USC is.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I should probably insert a name there. I just wasn't sure which one to do.
Contra Costa Community College.
Right?
Down toward that bottom of that page. She's telling him about how she knew Danny because, you know, she worked at the studio. And then she got back and her apartment was a mess. And that's why she went to Danny, because she kind of trusted Danny. And Monty says, why don't you go to the police? And she's like, the police were the ones who messed up my apartment. They were with that creepy building manager. And I just commented, uh-oh. 170. Yeah, 170. That amused me because they're like, Tomb's like, hey, I got to go see Danny. Lou goes upstairs with him, but then he stops and then turns around and shoos everybody back down the stairs because Danny's coming down the stairs, which I just thought was funny.
Right.
I just highlighted that and said, that's
funny. I'm glad you did.
And apparently he's got black shades and he's like, isn't that how you do the incognito thing? Because they're making fun of him. But I just kind of thought that was more like his area, like Hollywood people do that. Famous people do the black shades in the FBI.
Yeah. I was kind of going more for like the FBI, CIA spooks, you know.
That just sounded funny coming from a guy in a business where people wear dark shades.
Hey, man, people throw stones in glass houses all the time.
And then I just thought the part funny. I thought the Monty making fun of them for being old again.
Oh, yeah.
Every once in a while, Monty busts out an old joke on people.
Yeah, you know your audience.
Danny says, you should have stayed away from the Pally house. I was all set to get outside of town tomorrow. And then I wasn't actually clear if the Nazis followed Tomb to that hotel or if they were already there. Because if they were already there, then I would think this is a good opportunity for Tomb to say, well, sucker, they were about to nap her until we came along.
I was kind of thinking that Monty and Tomb were the ones that kind of blew her cover.
Yeah, they were being followed. Yeah, that makes sense. 171. I didn't make any comments. They're just talking about Richter and why Danny's helping Elsa. Tomb's like, hey, what's up? You banging her? And he's like, come on, dude. Why do you think I'm not a nice guy? 172. They're just still talking about Richter more. The brother. Danny's talking about how he's got a plan to get them out. And Tomb's kind of at the bottom. Tomb's kind of being a jerk. Decency left your life at about the same time Vivian left mine.
Yeah.
Oh, his deal is. So on page 173, Return to Tomb's Bungalow, and this is a modification of a scene we had in the first draft.
Yep.
I thought Lloyd was dead. Did they kill Lloyd?
No.
Who was the guy they killed? Who they lost that guy in the alley? It was like the building manager, but Lloyd's the building manager.
I'm gonna have to review that scene. I don't think they killed Lloyd.
Because they got away, and then they found the dude dead later.
Let's see here.
Well, okay, something to think about. I think I would like to see the scene the same way it was in the beginning. I mean, just replace it with Lloyd if he's still alive. A lot of it was cut out. A lot of it that I found humorous and oh crap about seems to be removed.
Oh, yeah. I was trying to trim down the scene, make it more streamlined.
I don't know. I thought it was fine the way it was.
Oh, okay.
I think it was too long. I am confused by the orientation. Like, how did he walk in and not see Lloyd sitting in his chair with his cat right away? Like, was the chair facing the other direction and then had like a tall back so he couldn't see somebody who was in the chair?
Well, it's the same way they do it in like every single movie ever made. They walk in straight, and then they like start doing their thing. Then they turn and they go, "Oh, what the fuck are you doing here?"
Oh, okay, he's off to the side.
Yeah, I should probably I could make that a little bit more clear.
Okay.
On that. Orient.
And then how come in this version he pushed the cat off his lap instead of holding it there petting it?
I don't know. Experimenting.
I kind of liked it the other way.
All right.
Because that was funny. Like the first time I read it, I was like, oh shit. That motherfucker's sitting in his chair petting his cat.
Nope.
I think in your edit, in this line, all Mortimer is in my favorite chair stroking Gene. So it looks like something left over from the first version of Mortimer. And then, you still got that line there. Yeah, because he comes in and sees the guy in his chair, and he's like, my ride on the wagon may be the shortest trip in history. That was pretty funny.
Thanks.
All right. So anyway, yeah, just that highlighted part.
Okay.
And then the last page, 174, I didn't have anything to talk about on that yet either, because he's basically, Lloyd's just threatening him, saying, hey, bro, you need to back off, etc. And then Tomb decides he's had enough. He's going to jump him. Because I think in the first version, dude had a gun. And in this version, he doesn't seem to have a gun. But somebody jumped him from behind.
Yep.
And then he wakes up. There's a note that says Elsa or Anna. So that messes with his head. And then he's trying to call people. Tries to call Anna. Tries to call Danny. And then finally, he gets his head cleared enough to leave the house. And I assume he's going to go find Anna.
Yeah. That's kind of where I'm going to go with it. I'm not going to make it easy on him, though.
Well, why would you?
I mean, I could if I wanted to be nice. Writers aren't supposed to be nice to their characters.
No. Turn the screws.
Turn the screws. Exactly.
All right. That's it.
That's it. Yep.
Story rolls on. Players are all coming into view.
Indeed. I got to figure out if Lloyd's dead or not.
Any questions for me?
No, I think I'm good.
That's good because I'm tired. I don't want to go to bed.
All right, man.
So that's it. If you like workshopping, if you like stories, if you got any tips or tricks or any workshopping stories you'd like to share, leave them in the comments. Drop them in the Facebook group. Check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/Pacific Novel Project. We've got a personalized book club where we read books every month and get you a book. And then we've got a picture. I'll be putting a picture up soon for February. 200 word short story contest. That's not a contest yet because we don't have anything to give anybody yet. But when we get enough people, we'll be able to give people stuff.
Yeah, who doesn't like stuff?
Right. Communists. Communists don't like stuff. They like other people's stuff.
Socialists like stuff. Communists don't like stuff, but socialists like stuff.
All the political genres meld into one for me.
That's how the terrorists win, Jason.
Yeah, that's true. Good night, Steve Aruno.
Good night, brother. I'll talk to you later.
All right. And good morning, good afternoon, good night to whoever may be out there.
Peace. We're out.